Pleased to have a presentation this morning by Karen Hartfield from the Washington State PBRN.
Great, thank you. I'm here on behalf of the Washington State PBRN. Greetings from the West Coast. Everyone else has been from North Carolina, which is where I went to school, or Kentucky. I work actually for Public Health Seattle King County, which is the lead agency for the Washington State PBRN. And we are, what I'm going to present today is a rapid assessment of H1N1 planning and implementation activities across the state. So by the end of the presentation, I hope that you'll get a good understanding of the purpose of the project and the methods. I'm going to review a little bit of data. We have a lot of data, and I can't really accomplish that in 8 minutes. But at least you'll get a sense of how and why we did the survey. A little bit about the PBRNs for those who don't know. The PBRN in Washington is made up of the partners that are listed on this slide. So we have the 9 largest county local health jurisdictions involved in our network, as well as partners from the Washington State Department of Health, University of Washington School of Nursing, and Center for Public Health Practice, which was useful in this project as they have one of the PERT grants. Also, the Washington State Association of Local Public Health Officials. So basically, we have the whole state covered in terms of local public health. We were actually asked to conduct this study by the Washington State Department of Health, and they granted part of their emergency preparedness money to Public Health Seattle King County for epidemiologists to do this work. So the purpose of the project essentially is to assess H1N1 preparedness activities before the expected outbreak in the fall, during the outbreak, and at the end. And the purpose for doing this is that we believe that ongoing appraisal of the planning and implementation will improve the mass vaccination effort. So part of what we're trying to do is to feed the results back to the local health jurisdictions during the outbreak so they can make changes. Also, we do want to compare what happened before and after, as some of the other presentations have alluded to. The state also actually is interested in using these results to plan for a future flu pandemic. And one of the things that we thought about doing was asking them some hypothetical questions about other scenarios, and we decided that they couldn't focus on anything except H1N1, so we wouldn't. This was a very rapid assessment conducted at a very, very busy time for most local health jurisdictions. We developed the survey questions with input from the state in early September and created a database for data entry so that we could actually enter the data while we were doing the interviews. The survey included 25 questions, and we thought it would take about 30 minutes to complete, but it actually took about an hour. And as I'm sure you can imagine, asking for an hour from local health jurisdictions in September was not an easy task. However, we were able to conduct our surveys with all 15 selected local health jurisdictions between September 15th and 22nd. We talked primarily to staff that were intimately involved with immunization or this specific activity, or the local health officer, him or herself. These were phone surveys. I noticed in some of the other presentations people did either household surveying or SurveyMonkey surveys. We tried to ask some open-ended questions, and we didn't feel we would get a good response on SurveyMonkey, so we did phone interviews. And I found from that one of our learnings really was that in order to get people to do a phone interview during an epidemic, you really have to sweet talk them. And so we had our sweetest receptionist calling them, and she managed to schedule all the appointments, whereas our email invitation wasn't really viewed as a party invitation. Nobody wanted to do it. We did follow up with short internet surveys to assess staffing patterns, and then just last week we tried to do a short survey to assess their response to the vaccine delay, and have had a lot, not as good success in getting response, and I think that really does suggest to us that we need to do a more in-person approach. So right now we're in the middle of completing the early outbreak survey, and we'll be doing late outbreak surveys probably in January, February, whenever things end. This shows you our state, the state of Washington, which is a large state with 32 counties, and we selected to participate the 9 regional emergency preparedness leads, but some of them cover multiple counties. You can see the numbers in there are the numbers of the regions, and so for the multi-county regions, we selected an additional county or two so that we were sure that we had good representation across the state. For those of you who haven't been to Washington State, there's great variation between east and west, rural, urban, mountains, not mountains. This next slide doesn't give you really any flavor for that, but just does show you that by choosing these 15 jurisdictions, we are able to actually represent 89% of the state's population. And we were able to collect data from regions with fairly diverse socio-demographics. So getting into some of the results, again, this is September 15th through 22nd, and this slide shows you the activity at the time of the survey. We were only seeing what was considered an outbreak in three of the 15 counties. One of those was a county called Whitman County, which is where Washington State University is located. And you might remember in the news that there was this huge thing where there were 2,000 students are infected in like 1 week when school started. And it seemed like that was a bit overstated, but in fact, Whitman County was in the middle of their outbreak while we were doing the survey. Everyone else was just beginning to see some uptick in cases. So we were really clearly at the beginning, which was right where we want it to be. And this shows you again, if you look at the bars for 9-12, which is down at the end, you'll see that we were, in fact, just at the beginning, we're beginning to see an uptake. This slide is hospitalized and fatal lab-confirmed flu cases. Someone else mentioned that beginning in the fall, we stopped testing people for H1N1 unless they were very, very sick or dying. Since then, the outbreak has continued to grow. You can see the last bar actually is October 24th, and it's probably incomplete reporting. So moving on to the results, first I'll just talk a little bit about the areas of consistency that we saw. We did find that local health jurisdictions said that they had roles in all of these major areas. And there were commonalities in terms of their plans to address all of these areas, but there were also some pretty significant variations. And I'm going to focus primarily today on school absenteeism, in influenza-like illness reporting, coordination and vaccination issues. We have a lot more data and we actually just produced a report. So if anyone is interested, I can send it to you. So in terms of school absenteeism reporting, there was a nice presentation at the beginning about this. We found that in Washington State, all local health jurisdictions did have some reporting system with the schools, but methods really differed significantly. We would have liked it if all of the jurisdictions had an automated web-based reporting, but they didn't. Only 2 of 15 did. Most sites were reporting by phone or by fax, which seems kind of like old-fashioned communication, but in fact, that is what people are using. Someone asked a question about what's the sort of threshold, and it basically was the reporting was triggered when absenteeism reached 10%, which is happening pretty routinely right now. We also found that 4 of the 15 did not get any reason for the absenteeism. So again, we don't know if the kids were just bored and wanting to play Xbox or whether they were really sick. Community mitigation was also mentioned here, and it's notable that none of our local health jurisdictions planned community mitigation measures such as closing schools and venues. I think if we asked them that back in April, when in fact we were closing schools, you would have had a different response. So people's opinions really, really shifted. However, people did note that if the severity of the virus changed, this would change. So as of right now, we're not seeing really severe illness, so that made sense. Okay, in terms of influenza-like illness reporting, this is important, and we found that across the state, almost everyone had some method, but the methods varied between active reporting, where, again, we had automated web-based reporting from hospitals, emergency departments, and whatnot, and passive reporting, which 9 of the 15 had. We were also really interested in the local health jurisdiction role around ICU bed coordination. We found great variation here. Only 7 of 15 knew the number and location of ICU beds. 5 of 15 said they had absolutely no role in this whatsoever. Vaccine issues, you can see that there was great agreement across the board. I think we've done a great job communicating, educating people. There's been lots of guidance around this, so I'm not going to read this slide to you. In terms of venues, though, this varied considerably, and based on the way the state is laid out, that makes a lot of sense. But you can see that actually a great number of our local health jurisdictions plan to use schools as vaccination venues. And it will be interesting to see whether they actually ended up doing that, especially given the delay. 7 out of 15 plan to use public health clinics. Only two actually plan to use commercial vaccinators, but there was an issue at the state in terms of a contract that was unresolved when we did the survey. We were expecting to see more people using them. And we did see that Medical Reserve Corps staff were planned to be called in. One other thing I want to mention quickly is staffing resources. This was a huge issue that we wanted to get at, and that was how many staff are needed to handle this kind of an outbreak? How is that impacting your other work? How many people are being pulled in from other areas? It was very hard for respondents to answer this question. It was virtually impossible. We did a follow-up survey and still didn't get good response. And I think that's really a problem for us, because if we're trying to seek funding and we don't even know what it takes to do it, we have a little bit of a problem. So I'm going to stop here just to let you know that when we asked about local health jurisdictions' major concerns, they had concerns mostly about surge capacity, and then also concern about overreaction and public panic. And it's interesting that the one health department that was smack in the middle of their outbreak, they had no concerns. They thought they were handling things just fine. So I think that's maybe bodes well for what we're going to do. Okay, so I'll stop here. There's lots of data.
And I know that you probably have questions, but
you can't ask them.
To be fair to